cannabis has some amazing properties and is a really strong advocate for a lot of conditions. But if it jeopardizes an animal's health because a needed treatment is delayed, so saying cannabis is going to work, cannabis is going to work, and we really need some other pharmaceuticals on board or a surgery, something needs to happen. Or if a pet parent happens to see their animal improving, and I would say seizures is probably the number one case where we see this happen occasionally, of the animals feeling so much better, much less anxious. They're not seeing some of those pre-ictal signs, but yet for that particular animal, their seizure pattern was a couple of months. And so the pet parent might pull off some of the anti-seizure meds, but cannabis isn't enough, or we don't have the molecular profile right enough to really control those seizures. And that can go really, really poorly for those animals, end up in cluster seizures in the ER, because we weren't really taking that holistic point of view. We were focusing too much on cannabis instead of what that animal actually needed.
Welcome to the Call the Vet Show, the podcast that helps pet parents understand and optimize the health of their furry family, so they can live the full and happy life you want for them. And here's your host, veterinarian Dr. Alex Avery.
Cannabis, marijuana, CBD oil, hemp products. Unless you've been living under a rock, if you've spent any time online looking into your pet's health, best ways to optimize their health, or even how to treat a huge number of different conditions, you're going to have come across talk and potentially some really wild claims about how amazing and revolutionary these products are. It can really be difficult sometimes, though, to separate fact from fiction and to know who you can believe, who you can trust, and what the actual evidence is that is out there. Well, today I've got the wonderful Dr. Cassara Andre, who is absolutely passionate about getting excellent information out there so that cannabis products can be used appropriately and correctly so that our pets can get the best possible benefit from them without also compromising their health. But before we get into that conversation, I'm your host, veterinarian Dr. Alex. Really delighted to have you on board with this episode today. If you're a new listener, then make sure you hit that subscribe or follow button on whatever app you're listening to. And for those of you who have listened before, welcome back. You're in for an absolute treat again today. And this is a conversation that I've wanted to have for a long time because I've been watching from afar, if you like, at the development of this field over the last couple of years. So here in New Zealand, we don't actually have any of these products currently available to us. But I really enjoy trying to keep my finger on the pulse for my own interest, as well as for you guys, wherever you are in the world, where these products are generally much more readily available and incredibly readily available. So without further ado, let's get the lowdown on the use of cannabis, CBD oil, and other products in our pet dogs and cats.
Here's this episode's expert interview.
Dr. Cassara, welcome along to the show. I'm really excited for our conversation today, and it's been a little bit kind of some time in the making with holidays and things. And the reason I'm so excited is because kind of cannabis, CBD, marijuana, it's an area that's exploded in growth and interest among vets, pet parents, and marketers as well. And maybe we'll touch on that a little bit later. But I'd love to know what got you interested in this field in particular.
Absolutely. Thanks, Alex. I'm really excited for this conversation and glad that we finally were able to make it work. That was a little bit challenging to find a time. Let's see how I got started with cannabis. I think all of your audience will know the feeling of we look for things for our own animals first. And that was definitely what brought me into this field. I had a cat who was 17 at the time, and really just struggling with IBD all of her life, a couple of behavioral disorders, but iffy kidneys, all the stuff that all of our old kitties are struggling with. And I was really looking for some good pain medication options for her, as well as just some GI support. And I just didn't feel like I had what I was looking for. And at the same time, I was starting to help a friend explore medical marijuana for their father, for a human friend. And of course, I just thought to try it on my own animal. So I saw such a dramatic difference for her, changed her life, had amazing years with her that I never thought I would, just because she was kind of at that point where there's not a lot you can kind of do to make that better. And they kind of start on that decline. And yet cannabis for her was absolutely life-saving. And the last years of her life were not just years, but really, really good years with her sitting in the garden, climbing up on stuff she shouldn't have. So it was definitely my heart cat that brought me into cannabis, like most other things in my profession.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. Because at 17, that's, you know, all we want is maybe a little bit more time with, you know, a good quality of life, isn't it? So to have that dramatic result is fantastic.
Yeah, it was mind blowing. Absolutely.
Yeah. So we're talking there about kind of cannabis and medical cannabis. And I'm sure a lot of people will have heard about CBD and then marijuana. And is that the same as cannabis? And where does CBD come into it? And hemp products, like help us understand, you know, what all these different things are, because it can be very confusing.
Yeah, great question. Absolutely. But it is a really great place to start for anyone who's beginning to be interested in cannabis or just getting their toes in the water, because knowing your terminology makes everything make a lot more sense. Now, it will depend which country you're sort of working within. Some of the countries have different policies that will define cannabis, hemp, marijuana, but I'll talk about what we see here in the States, and I'm practicing out of Colorado, so this applies to us as well. Cannabis is the overarching term for the plant. So the genus is cannabis. And so whenever I'm talking about cannabis, you'll notice that I'm pretty careful to use it in that more encompassing comes from this genus of plants. And then I become more specific of hemp, which means that it just isn't going to have as much THC. It's usually grown for different purposes than the medicinal molecules from it. And then marijuana is the side that has a lot more THC. So you'll see that through the dispensaries, more highly regulated. But usually I'm talking about cannabis, just as cannabis-derived molecules. Because from a clinical perspective, what I really care about is what are the molecules that end up in the product. It doesn't actually matter to me too much. If it comes from a hemp plant or a marijuana plant, some access rules can apply there. But from a medicinal perspective, it's really about which molecules end up going in the patient.
Cool. And that THC, that's a kind of psychotrophic, psychoactive component that causes you to get high, if you like.
Yeah. So one of the actually hundreds of molecules that the cannabis plant makes in that group of cannabinoids. So THC is one of them. CBD is one of them. CBDA, so the acid, has an acid group instead of we sort of make it fall off to make CBD. So there's hundreds and hundreds of cannabinoid molecules. And we just kind of know about those two prominent ones. That's what's in all the news and all the media and everyone's really excited about. There's actually a lot of minor cannabinoids that we're finding a lot of use for clinically. They're really, really fun to work with.
Okay. Oh, cool. So, and are they like, how different do like maybe CBD oil products, you know, well, how do they differ from the ones with THC? Do they have all of these other cannabinoids in them, or is there a marked difference in what that profile is?
It's kind of anybody's game. Yeah. It's actually really hard to know what's in the product because not all of the industry comes at this from a medical-minded perspective. Any pet parent who's beginning to dabble in the cannabis realm will know that sometimes pretty marketing or pretty branding is really what tries to win the day. And when you really try to drill down and see which molecules are actually in this product, what's actually contained in it, sometimes it can be really tough to find out. So what we ask for from a medical perspective is a certificate of analysis. It's just like asking for blood work on a patient to know where all of your internal organs, how they're working. So same thing, we ask for a COA, certificate of analysis, on every product that we're going to work with or the pet parent wants to bring in. And essentially that answers the question that you said, what molecules are in here, whether it came from the hemp side or the marijuana side, it doesn't really matter until you see that COA for the product that's actually going to be administered. And then you know which molecules you're working with.
Sure. And I think some certainly websites, I mean, a lot of people shop online and, you know, CBD for my dog is probably a pretty common Google search if we're looking in this area. A lot of websites will have that kind of prominently displayed, or they'll have an FAQ or something with that analysis, an ideally independent analysis on there. Yeah. What kind of things should they be looking for? I mean, it's often highlighting the THC component to prove that it is a CBD rather than another product, isn't it?
What's all in there? Yeah. Well, I will say first off, if you find the COA prominently displayed, that product already gets a gold star. They're already high on the list in my book. because it really is a good defining factor. If you can't find a COA or you can't get one just by calling or emailing, if it's hard, you know, if you have to dig through a bunch of layers, I would look for a different product. There are a lot of companies that are great, doing a great job out there and making that lab result really available. So if you can't find it, just switch to a different product. And so, yes, the molecular profile, the molecules that are actually in the product, is a prominent piece of the COA. But even more than that is probably the freedom from information. So is it free from heavy metals? Is it free from pesticides? Is it free from mold, bacteria? Those are things that you'll also find on the COA. And together, that lack of the bad, and then which molecules you're actually using, you really need both of those together to give you a clinical picture of what it's going to do in the patient.
Sure. So as well as, letting you know what it is, it's a quality control to let you know that it's safe from that point of view.
Yes, absolutely.
Regarding kind of safety, because I know people will have, you know, potentially concerns about things. Are there any safety concerns? I mean, if I think, you know, the last time I saw a dog who'd got into their owner's pot stash, it was, you know, peeing all over the place, it was falling, you know, nodding off, falling asleep and twitching. But, you know, ultimately was absolutely fine. Are there any kind of other safety concerns that people need to be aware of, or maybe other medication reactions, that kind of thing?
Yeah, what a great question from all aspects, both from the practitioner side, but also just for pet parents to be aware. I will first say that intoxication that most of us are familiar with from a veterinary perspective, that's a lot of THC. Usually that's when an animal gets into someone's stash or picks something out of the trash can, and hundreds of milligrams of THC. When we're working with THC therapeutically, we're on a much, much smaller the other side of the spectrum, and you really don't see those effects. In fact, most of my cases have to have some THC in them because it's a pretty powerful molecule. So it's all in, like all medicine, it's about the balance more than the individual molecules themselves. So aside from put your stash where your dog can't reach it, that being the number one safety piece, it is looking into COA, so making sure there's not those contaminants that are in there. And then recognizing that these molecules do actually have a lot of power within the body, particularly now as we begin to understand what the endocannabinoid system is and how many things in the body it controls. Everything from sleep, memory, learning, appetite, social anxiety in humans, some behavioral disorders in our animals, just so incredibly important to mammalian health and well-being, that when we begin to add molecules into an animal's regimen, we need to recognize that there can be a lot of interactions. So CBD in particular, one of the cannabinoids that cannabis produces, it actually is a really important competitive inhibitor of cytochrome P450. So that's a molecule in the liver that metabolizes almost 60% of our pharmaceutical drugs. So if an animal is on pretty much any other medication, it's important that everyone just be aware that there's a potential for potentiation. Do you know what I mean by that? It could just make the effects of those medications stronger because that enzyme that would normally metabolize that drug, it's working on other things. So the drug's just going to stick around a little bit longer.
Yeah.
We think about making sure the molecular profile matches the animal's personality. So even if we are going to use some THC, but we have a really, really anxious dog, we might approach it really, really slowly and ramp up over time. And then making sure that we are evaluating periodically. So what we do in our consulting practices, have the pet parent go check in with their primary care veterinarian in 4 weeks after starting a product, and then again at 12. Cannabis has proven itself incredibly safe, but we still want to check for liver values, renal health, just make sure that everything is as it should be and we're not missing anything.
Fantastic. So what I'm hearing you say is that this isn't a product that I jump online, go and buy and start and just kind of freestyle it and do my own thing at home. Like there's, you know, there's quite a little bit to this. If we, you know, and it may be that people have bought CBD oils and they're doing that and they're going, well, you know, there's no problem, I'm doing fine. There might be something going on under the scene, or it might be that we're not getting the best benefits that we can from these products.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to say it, that if you do have an animal that has an underlying condition or is on other medications, you could have some complications. Or as you said, you might just not be seeing the effects that you could be because the molecular profile isn't exactly matched for that patient.
Yeah, wonderful. So if we're moving kind of onto the treatment side of things, because there are a whole load of claims for, you know, if you jump on, you know, maybe not in the scientific community, but on Facebook and, you know, wherever people do their research for it cures everything. It does. It's a wonder drug that is responsible for amazing cures and is the only thing people need to be giving their pets. But maybe let's break down what conditions we know it is appropriate for. And then I don't know, is there anything on the horizon that we may be, you know, maybe coming too soon?
Yeah, what an exciting area to begin broaching now, because cannabis medicine is finally kind of getting to that point where we know our molecules, we understand, beginning to understand the system they're working on, that it really is a time when we can begin making some educated predictions about which molecules will work well, which ratios of molecules together work for certain conditions. But you're right. I will say that when I started working in cannabis the first time, or kind of that season of my life, the thing that irked me the most, that I found most annoying, was CBD for everybody. Yeah. Everything needs CBD. And just from a medicine perspective, that's just not how biology works. We don't see that 100% across the board. But at the same time, as I began to learn more about the endocannabinoid system, so the system within every mammal's body that the cannabis molecules are working on, it actually begins to make a little bit more sense why we see so many different conditions respond to cannabis-derived molecules. And really that comes down to understanding what the endocannabinoid system is and what it's meant to do and how these molecules from the outside can support that system in its own function. So essentially the ECS or endocannabinoid system is responsible for homeostasis in the body, responsible for balance. And so if that system is out of whack, you will see clinical signs. In humans, there's actually a diagnosable endocannabinoid deficiency syndrome. So it's linked closely to IBS, Crohn's disease, anxiety disorders. And when you supplement with a cannabis product, you really see those clinical signs resolve. Now, we don't know that for sure in animals, but I think that we'd all be not the curious scientific thinkers that we are if we weren't thinking that this could be something that we see in our animals as well.
Yeah, and hey, you saw it in your cat potentially as well, who had the IBD and you know, years later was doing, you know, very well in very old age.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's really true from a clinical perspective. Those cases that really are just not responding well to a more Western approach or maybe a little bit more conventional approach, those are usually the ones that respond really well to cannabis. And so we're beginning to think about not so much taking a molecule and just making a system do something, but more switching our focus and saying maybe this endocannabinoid system needs more support. And that's what we're actually trying to do with cannabis. All that to say, we can actually see cannabis work really impressively in a lot of various conditions. But you know what? If you break your leg, you're still going to have to go to surgery. So there are some things that cannabis is not going to fix. And there are some cases where we need to think about how we use it, especially in our little patients, patients with renal disease, cardiac disease, other medications on board, things like that. So yes, absolutely. Cannabis makes a huge difference in a lot of cases. But when we really drill down to what can we really use it well for, there are some particular ones that spring to the surface. So I guess I'll just pause for that, because that was more about endocannabinoid system questions or comments on that. And then I can talk more about.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you're right that it's a very exciting time, because it seems to be that we've gone from a lot of fluff and, you know, people shouting on loudhailers to actually a lot of, you know, research being, you know, in the process and in the pipeline, and actually results coming out to prove that it is a beneficial product. So, you know, how exciting is that? We get another tool in our arsenal potentially to use to help our, you know, our pets and what could be better than that? So I guess I'm kind of watching from afar, because we don't have access to a lot of these products here in New Zealand at the moment. Hopefully that will change. But I've seen, you know, evidence in pain and seizures, I guess, have been the prominent ones, anxiety. There's a whole range of things, isn't there?
Absolutely. Well, you have some exciting stuff going on in New Zealand at the moment. Hopefully y'all will be having access to products soon. So that's exciting to see. I agree. I think that pain is probably the number one thing we see pet parents reach out for to work with cannabis for. Sometimes this is because it's been effective for their own pain. And that's a big reason that a lot of pet parents pursue any modality for their animal is it helped me and I want that same relief or that same benefit for my animal. So pain probably being the number one. And I would say if there's a cannabis is probably going to work. Pain is a good one to pick. It has so many different interactions on so many different systems, inflammation, perception of pain, worry about pain, some of those social anxiety components. If I'm a painful older dog and I have a young animal in the house, I don't touch me, you might hurt me. Just working on some of those holistic aspects. Pain is probably the number one that's easy to work with cannabis. Seizures or neurologic disease is probably next. We have some actually really good papers out of CSU, Colorado State University, talking about use of hemp in seizure disorders and seeing a lot of improvement there. Then probably I would say cancer is the next one that people reach out for help with cannabis on. And Alex, this is where we kind of get into the, you can do it on your own, but if you really want to have definitive care of cancer, you really need to be thinking about which molecules are in the mix, what the ratios between the molecules are, how it's administered, kind of how it's titrated up. So for us, we have Dr. Trina Hazad, who's an integrative oncologist, working with our team, who essentially will look at a case, help make a molecular profile, and then we can help the pet parent find those products. But we see some amazing results from an oncology level. It takes a lot more care. There's a lot more need that goes into knowing what your molecules are. Yeah. And then for me, I would say last is probably behavioral disorders. That's my area of professional interest. Separation anxiety in animals, PTSD in animals, emotional trauma in animals. We see cannabis bring some amazing healing properties to the table. Same thing as in for humans. So I mentioned that last, but I'll have to say that one's probably the nearest and dearest to my heart.
Yeah, and it's something that we're seeing quite a lot of across the world with everything that's gone on in the last couple of years, and we'll see the ramifications of that in for many years to come, I think. So, you know, what a great thing for people to reach for. When it comes to, so we've already kind of said, you know, don't just necessarily go and buy the first product you find online and work with your vet. But should we be thinking about using these products in conjunction with our existing conventional medicines? Because I guess my concern is that people go, oh, I've heard CBD is good for seizures. My dog's having seizures. I'm going to go and buy this and I don't need to worry, or it would be wrong to start another drug, or, you know, I'm worried about this other drug and this is a more natural product. So my worry is that we're maybe relying on it too heavily, at least to start with.
I absolutely agree with that, Alex. I think you hit the nail on the head in terms of a big area of concern that the veterinary practicing community has towards pet parents who are interested in using cannabis, not because it's not an amazing modality, but this is something that my team works with a lot from the harm reduction education perspective. So both to colleagues and to pet parents, what you said now of cannabis has some amazing properties and is a really strong advocate for a lot of conditions. But if it jeopardizes an animal's health because a needed treatment is delayed, so saying cannabis is going to work, and we really need some other pharmaceuticals on board or a surgery, something needs to happen. Or if a pet parent happens to see their animal improving, and I would say seizures is probably the number one case where we see this happen occasionally, of the animals feeling so much better, much less anxious. They're not seeing some of those preictal signs. But yet for that particular animal, their seizure pattern was a couple of months. And so the pet parent might pull off some of the anti-seizure meds, but cannabis isn't enough, or we don't have the molecular profile right enough to really control those seizures. And that can go really, really poorly for those animals, can end up in cluster seizures in the ER, because we weren't really taking that holistic point of view. We were focusing too much on cannabis instead of what that animal actually needed. So I agree. I think that delay of needed treatment or pulling off medication before it's appropriate are big concerns that I have all the time. Cannabis works beautifully with all of our medications that we know of so far. There's a couple that we're a little bit careful with, but as an adjunct, it's such a good supporter. And if the animal is able to come off some of those pharmaceuticals down the road, yes, that's amazing. But I always love starting with cannabis as an adjunct at first until we see what the body is going to do, until we let it tell us how much support it needs.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess pain would be another, you know, one, the classic kind of older dog or cat with arthritis is that we don't just treat with, you know, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, which a lot of people accuse us, but we look at weight, we look at diet, mm-hmm. we look at exercise, lifestyle, all that kind of thing. And cannabis CBD can play a role, a very important role in that. And that's absolutely one that once we get everything settled and that initial crisis over, if that's what's caused that presentation, then absolutely we might be able to withdraw those anti-inflammatory medications and just rely on everything else. So, you know, what a fantastic situation to be in.
But if that dog tumbles down the stairs, I'm probably going to put it back on non-steroidals. Yeah. And yet know that cannabis is supporting the health of the liver while it's on those other medications. So it really is a beautiful conjunction. It's a fun modality to work with.
So one accusation that I think gets thrown at a lot of vets or could be, and you could listen, well, the vet's always going to say go to the vet because that's how they earn a living. But also, you know, my vet's not talking to me about CPD, they're not talking to me about these cannabis products. So, you know, what's that all about? Because I'm reading all about this. I'm hearing today that it's a really exciting product that has, you know, got some proven benefits. So why is my vet not talking to me about it?
Yeah, great question. We encounter a lot of frustration from both sides, both from the veterinary professional side and the pet parent side around this issue. But what I tell everyone first is that this entire industry just needs a lot of compassion each to each other, because it's a really, really, really new industry. We've only known about the endocannabinoid system since 1980s. I mean, it's really, really new. And so it's hard for all of us to come into it and not have the same expectations that we do about our medical professionals understanding the GI tract or understanding how muscles work. The system in and of itself takes a while to figure out. And we're kind of just at that point now where we do know the receptors, we understand the endogenous molecules that our body makes, we understand how these exogenous molecules affect that system. So it is at a point where it is being able to be taught, being able to be given a CE. And then I think from the veterinary practitioner side, there's that strong tenet of do no harm. If you don't know about it, there's a potential that you could do harm. And not knowing how it interacts with modalities that you're already familiar with opens up this big unknown. So from a practitioner perspective, many times my colleagues will elect to not work with cannabis just because they don't want it to go poorly. They don't want it to go in the wrong direction or them say something bad or give bad advice. And that can be frustrating. But at the same time, there are starting to be a lot of resources, a lot of experts who will consult on cannabis, just like you would send out a pathology case and just get some expert opinion, or an oncology case just to get some outside insight. And so that's really what we're trying to help with, is not every veterinarian needs to be an expert in cannabis to be able to answer the questions that are coming from their pet parent. There are now lots and lots of resources, and we can do this together. You know, we're all trying to figure it out at the same time. So I would love to see just a little bit less of that condemnation, both of self for the practitioner side, and a lot more compassion towards all the different parties. We're figuring it out together, and there's still a lot of work to be done there.
Yeah, that's not some underlying conspiracy that vets are trying to destroy the cannabis industry, which is
now. Don't tell anybody.
But how can people, maybe bring this conversation up with their vet? So they, you know, they've got a vet that they trust, and that's fantastic. Something that I encourage so much, and not chopping and changing just because your current vet doesn't talk about it. How can people start that conversation with their vet without worrying about upsetting them or offending them?
I definitely would say approaching it with, can we do this together? Attitude makes it easier for both sides. If you are both figuring out the research, both thinking about what would be good for the animal patient that we're both caring a lot about, I think it brings down a lot of those trigger points for everybody, and it's much more likely to be a good, productive conversation. Really important, at least in the US and particularly in Colorado, is this aspect of the pet parent starting it. So the pet parent initiating the treatment, because cannabis is available at every gas station here, at every grocery store. So for a pet parent to say, I've made the decision that I want to use cannabis for my animal. veterinary team, can you help me do that safely? Help me figure out what I should do or shouldn't do, what research is out there, what isn't. But the pet parent really acknowledging that they're taking that onus of, I want my animal to be on cannabis. Then that really creates this atmosphere of safety for the veterinary team to practice in, especially if there's some weird legal policies or vague legal policies. Really, they can step in and say, great, I am going to help you make sure that your pet is safe. So I'm going to come at this from a harm reduction education perspective, talk about what should not be in your product. We don't want any pesticides, heavy metals. We don't want any of these contaminants. We don't want things like artificial sweeteners, xylitol. We don't want any of that in here. Let's look at some of the research studies. What doses were used there? Let's call some people that we can ask. And that immediately just changes the tone of the conversation where you're both in it together. So that's what I'd say. Start that conversation with your vet, because it does need to be in that partnership, but recognize that we are all still learning and it's a huge learning curve for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think every treatment should be a partnership and a collaboration anyway. Yeah. So this is
absolutely
no different.
It's just one of the rest of them.
Yeah, you touched on kind of the legal aspect. Are there, because I know that's a changing fluid situation as well. Are there any restrictions? Is that dependent on state of vets actually talking about these products? You know, is there anything people need to consider like that?
Yeah, by now, it is very state and country dependent. Mm. A year or so ago, I could have told you a more broad swath of here's what everyone's doing, but now it's really a patchwork across the states of what policies are in place. So I will just say that it is the responsibility of the veterinary team to know what policies govern their area. Country, state, county, city, you can see everyone have different policies. But it really does help when we approach it from the perspective of, my pet parent is doing this. The substance is going in the animal. It's going into my patient. So I should figure out what that means from an oversight perspective. I cannot even necessarily deal with the cannabis part, but I can still make sure that organs are functioning as they should, that pain levels are going up or down. So that's always in the veterinarian's purview. And then it is going to be pretty dependent on where you're practicing. Here in Colorado, even though we have both recreation and medical marijuana available, and definitely a really big hemp market, there's still no prescribing of cannabis. And that's a really important thing, I think, for particularly pet parent individuals to know. The prescription piece comes from, in the US at least, having a DEA license. So allows us to prescribe pain medications and antibiotics, but it requires that the DEA also recognizes the molecules that we're working with. And it's just not a true thing for cannabis. And I could go into more details, but I'm not sure it's necessarily interesting to everyone out there. But essentially, it comes down to the fact that hemp is not regulated by the federal government and marijuana is a Schedule 1. And so that's why it comes to the dispensary. So it's a huge work in progress. Everything is very fluid, but it comes back to, it just has to be done in that collaborative partnership, because it will differ from state to state.
Yeah, absolutely. And it might be one reason why vets are reluctant to talk about it, because it's, you know, you don't want to get on the wrong side of various agencies when you're dealing with products like this. So that uncertainty may lead to I've got treatments that I know work and that I've been using for years. So let's just kind of stay in my lane, if you like.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a whole load of information, and I think we've covered an awful lot of questions that people would have, and given some really important pointers for starting and for using this in dogs and cats. I wonder though, with consulting with lots of different vets and seeing kind of this in lots of patients, I wonder what the most common mistakes you see that people make with using these products.
Yeah, it is our privilege to consult across all the states within the US, but do a lot of international consulting as well, which adds an element of challenge. The US probably has the best testing of products so that I can know exactly what's in my products. I know exactly the major cannabinoids and the minor cannabinoids and the terpenes that are there. But a lot of our colleagues are practicing with products that we know some generalities of, but we don't really know the specifics. So when we get to consult across countries and across states, it means that it keeps us on our toes in really being adaptive to whatever the question ends up being. But I will say that across all those geographic zones, the thing that I think I would love to tell every colleague of mine out there and every pet parent out there is there's no recipe. There's no one size that fits all for cannabis because of what we talked about a few minutes ago. The endocannabinoid system changes from minute to minute. If you have two identical animals in our research studies, we have identical mice that have been bred exactly the same and they've lived in the same environment. You can have completely different endocannabinoid systems between the two. If you and I are walking along and we both have healthy endocannabinoid systems and I trip and fall, within a couple of minutes, some of the receptors in my ECS are going to upregulate and sort of say, hey, there's inflammation here. I need help. The endocannabinoid system is this amazing interaction point between mammals and their environment. And so when we try to make a protocol that is very recipe, there's going to be 20 milligrams of CBD, there's going to be 20 milligrams of THC in this bottle, and then we're going to give it once a day. It just doesn't work like we think it will, because that's a very pharmaceutically based mindset. Cannabis needs to be very flexible, very adaptable to whatever's going on in the patient's life at the moment. One of my favorite places to get pet parents to is for them to actually be comfortable using multiple products so that they can change it based on how the animal's feeling, maybe PM versus AM and different molecules that need to be in the mix. So I would say that is my top thing that I would say, myth that needs to be dispelled, is there's no recipe. Yeah. And it has to be a very, very individualized medicine for it to work well.
Yeah. So give two drops twice a day is not a, yeah. Or if you're doing that,
then we're not kind of there, yeah, but it won't get you everywhere it could be.
But it goes back to not getting the full benefit from these products. We need to be a little bit more flexible. So Dr. Kassara, I feel we've covered a lot of ground, but I also feel we've only just vaguely scratched the surface. It's a wonderful time to be involved in this area, and what an exciting time to be a pet parent as well. Where can people go to learn more? Because you've got fantastic resources available to people, don't you?
I will say that probably our most popular resource is our consultation program, because that's really where most people are right now. I'm interested. I want to know more, but I want it for my animal. I have something that I want to use it for. And so that is kind of a mix of education about what cannabis is, about endocannabinoid system, but also consulting on a particular case. And those are available both direct to pet parents, but also to veterinary professionals. So the point of that being, dive in. Like, it's such a fun medicine to work with. Look at your state policies, your country policies, make sure you know what you're doing there. But work on a case, especially to my veterinary colleagues. I would say, don't worry about not knowing all the parts and pieces. Pick a case that you feel like needs something extra that isn't just quite working, and dive in with that. And then if you have that collaborative partnership with your pet parent, that's when you really start learning together and get to see the effects of the molecules on the animal. That's really what really starts to come together for sure. So I would say probably through a consultation service lets us answer all the questions, figure out where people are, give them additional resources. Our specialists can give papers if that kind of needs to be cited in the molecular profile. So hopefully that kind of helps.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a lot of information out there. It's actually kind of hard to curate. A lot of people can get frustrated at that point.
Oh, and once you've got it up to date, it needs to be updated again,
I'd imagine. Yes, exactly. Next week. It'll be old next week.
Yeah. And where can people go to get that consultation service?
Veterinarycannabis.org is where we will post education videos as they come up, the consultation service, but also where people can just reach out for questions, especially if anyone's just feeling kind of lost or confused. Even if it's not us, we can point them in the right direction. Canada has CAVCM is the Canadian group, and then VCS, Veterinary Cannabis Society, are the two groups that you really start see forming from the nonprofit side, and they're really diving into the educational aspect. So I would also say that those are really great resources. And then our website is veterinarycannabis.org.
Wonderful. Well, I'll leave all of those links in the show notes so people can jump onto them, dive into some reliable information, because that's something that can be very difficult to come by, separating fact from fiction. So Dr. Kassara, thank you for your time today. Thank you for helping to spread the message of this potentially wonderful product that's going to benefit the lives of so many pets. And I look forward to hearing what the future brings.
Absolutely. Thanks, Alex.
helping your pet live the happy, healthy life they deserve.
What a wonderful conversation. I enjoyed talking to Dr. Cassara so much, and she shared such a lot of expertise and I think really practical advice and information about the use of cannabis, marijuana, CBD oil, and brought up some really important considerations surrounding their use and the holistic use of these products in our pets, so that we can not only get some of the benefits from introducing them into your pet's treatment or wellness regime, but we can get the best benefit possible. So I hope you took away just as much as me. I'd love it if you could share this podcast episode with two or three of your pet owning friends or family. This is a hugely important topic to get some really accurate information about. There's so much fluff and rubbish, quite frankly, online. It's great to get to hear from a true expert in this field. So thank you in advance for sharing. And until the next episode, I'm veterinarian Dr. Alex. This is the Call the Vet Show, because they're family.
That's it for this episode of the Call the Vet Show. Be sure to visit callthevet.org to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover our fantastic bonus content. We'll see you next time.